Recyclical, making lithium ion last forever. Recyclical's patented recycling process achieves up to 100% recovery of battery metals from lithium ion batteries for electric vehicles, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, and aluminum. Recyclical Battery Materials Incorporated trades on the TSX Venture AMY, on the OTCQB AMYZF, and Frankfurt ID4. For more information, visit recyclico.com or phone us at 778-574-4444. Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever.
You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at talkdigitalnetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is market historian Bob Hoy. He's the chief investment strategist for chartsandmarkets.com. He's speaking to us from Vancouver. Welcome back to the show, Bob.
Yeah, hi, Jim. Here we are, our Friday to get together with you and I and the markets and all of our listeners out there. Oh, yeah, they live in listener land, don't they?
Sure they do.
Yeah.
If you're in a bad neighborhood, is in gangland. Like someone said, it was a gangland shooting. And somebody says, where's gangland? I said, well, in Vancouver, anywhere.
Yeah.
Anywhere there's shootings.
Yeah, no, the criminal part always used to be downtown.
Downtown Maine east side in Vancouver. Now people get shot in the nicest of neighborhoods. Doesn't matter.
Everywhere, yeah.
Yeah. So how are your investments in Kevlar? I don't know. I'm tempted to get a Kevlar something.
They're very, they look very, very smart to wear. You know,
yeah.
It really gives you some cachet to be wearing, a Kevlar bulletproof vest. Yeah.
Yeah. Sad to say, the Kevlar store in New York, their number one selling item is a Kevlar book cover for school children.
Oh, my gosh. That is extraordinary.
Yeah. Sad times.
Yeah.
Then you got to do that. Anyway, Bob, let's get to listener questions first off. We have a question from Michael. Hi, Bob. Do you see a gold price over $5,000 and a silver price over $100 an ounce? And if so, what are your thoughts on that? Michael.
No, I don't see the first or the second. This is an example of gold pundits out there and silver pundits. They're even worse. They've got this fixation of dollar down, gold up, and they can't see anything else. And, of course, what I've done and did a long time ago, just took the price of gold and, first of all, deflated it by the CPI. That's the annualized rate of inflation. And then did it all the way from a way back, like 300 years ago. And it tells you a story. It says that the gold's deflated price in the senior currency, in the financial capital. Now, dollars in New York used to be sterling pounds in London. But the real price of gold goes down a little in a financial bubble, and it climaxes. And then the real price of gold goes up. And then going opposite, this is copper's real price goes up with the bubble, and then it goes down with the bust, which we're getting. So what this is doing is setting up a good move in the real price of gold. And what the next step I did was take gold and instead of just dividing it by the inflation rate, which is published monthly, and you have to wait for it. Do it with the CRB, and you can get it all day long. And the commodities. So what you got when you have gold divided by commodities, the CRB is a proxy for mining costs. And if mining costs, as defined by the CRB, are going down relative to the bullion price, gold miners' operating margins are improving, and same with their earnings. So there's a world of difference. If you buy gold stocks on the ancient and shop-worn story about dollar down and gold's up, you're actually speculating in the foreign exchange fluctuations. But if you buy gold based upon a stream of increasing earnings, you're investing. A world of difference there. And also, I think what'll happen in this post-bubble environment is that there will be times when the gold stocks will be outperforming the S&P. So if you got GDX outperforming the S&P, you get a couple of quarters of that going on, and your more aggressive equity fund managers, they're going to have to get into the hot game. So, you know, most equity fund managers don't touch gold stocks. But with the outperformance, there's going to be some equity fund managers that are going to get on board. So the out there is very good for gold in real terms. And it's also going to be very good for gold stocks. So we've used the term at times on a discovery. They could be fabulous. And then now silver is going to be a bit of a problem in a post-bubble. In a boom, the gold-silver ratio goes down because silver outperforms gold in a general boom. And then in a bust, it goes the other way. So the gold-silver ratio, now it can go up such that not only is silver underperforming gold, but the silver stocks, pure silver stocks, could be really underperforming their counterparts in the gold sector. So we put together a list of junior gold stocks. I think there's about 10 in it. And it's a good blanket way of participating in the sector. And if anybody's interested, they can get in touch with us at chartsandmarkets.com.
Now, we had a comment in a previous interview from Mike Swanson from Wall Street Window. And he said right now he likes gold because in the recent market corrections, gold only dropped half as fast. And when the markets resumed going up, it went up twice as fast. Is that a factor?
That's an interesting way of looking at it. I have no reason to add to what I've said. Gold's real price will be going up. Gold will be going up relative to costs, and the gold miners will do well.
And Bob, I guess the comment also is in any well-balanced portfolio, gold is part of it, isn't it?
Oh, the old one, yeah. You should have some bullion in a safe deposit box. Yeah. I'd just as soon make money out of the sector in gold stocks.
Yes, because gold bullion itself, you don't make money.
You gain and you take the money off the table. You know?
Right, whereas gold bullion, you have to pay for storage and so on.
Yeah.
Unless you got a really good safe at home.
Yes.
We'll take a look at some of the headlines that caught Bob's eye right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Bob Hoy. Here are some of the headlines that caught Bob's eye. Unanimity. I can never say that word. In bullish views, this market reeks of complacency. So people are unanimous in their bullish views. Should they be?
Yeah, that one was some zero hedge.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that is a strong. It shows just how strong the crowd's view on the stock market is, and it's just, this would not go with the bottom, but it's part of the topping process, and we may be with the crazies that went on in the summer, June and July, straight ups. Maybe that's the hottest part has been recorded for the market. And now we're just watching the unwinding.
As we're speaking Friday morning in Vancouver, taking a look at the stock board, everything's red. The NASDAQ's outlined in red. That's never a good thing. Everybody said September's probably the time we're going to see a major correction in this toppy market. What's your opinion on that, Bob?
Oh, yeah. Seasonally, September can be a bad month. But then also, you can have sometimes into early September really good, you know, just right to the early part of September, and then it can go all to hell, which this seems to be happening now. And when they fail in September, that liquidity problem can continue on to a real crisis in October. And it's interesting that the time, if there's going to be a big credit or liquidity crisis, the chances are it'll be discovered in the fall. And in looking at prices in stocks this week and commodities, it looks like we're going into a crisis. And we'll be watching for further big headlines on that one.
Now, of course, the Warren Buffetts of the world have made their fortunes by holding on to their cash, not buying the market when it's toppy, and instead waiting for the next crash.
Well, the latest I saw on Buffett is that he was the biggest cash position in a relative sense he's ever had. But then what I like here is we got some strong ones here. Commodity comeback, a secular bull market just getting started. And this guy, Harnett, the commodity bull market is just getting started. Well, Harnett is a high-up strategist with the Bank of America, and he is probably taking a look at the rate of CPI inflation rising a while ago and then saying, this is it, the dollar's going to crash and commodities are going to go to the moon. And that's old news. The commodity high was in 2008, a huge, huge high. It was tested weekly in 2011. And then the way financial history works is that a decade after the big commodity boom, you have a big bubble in stocks and financial markets. And generally, that kind of peaked out in 2022, although things were distorted by COVID, but it looks like we're on the backside of a great financial bubble. And the main thing following a great financial bubble has been a Great Depression. So we'll see how this goes.
Well, wasn't that the goal of the central banks when they started hiking interest rates with the set goal of fighting inflation? And so, of course, as you raise the rates, you make everything more expensive. And that causes a recession. It's deliberate.
No.
Isn't that deliberate? I mean, that's going to be the result. People are going to foreclose on their mortgages.
No, that's standard thinking, Jim. The way financial history works is short rates, such as treasury bills, go up in the boom and down in the bust. And the Federal Reserve follows, is always 2 or 3 months after the market has changed interest rates. So the way it works, and write this down, everybody write it down, short rates like treasury bills go up in the boom. And so long as they're going up, they're confirming that the boom is on. What you want to watch for is when short treasury bill rates start going down, and they're off about 45 beeps from their high a couple of months ago. So we're now downtrending in short rates. And the bad things happen when short rates are going down. We've got a chart that we kind of like to bring out. It's the S&P back in 2008, just clipped out for a couple of months when the T-bill yield was plunging. And guess what? The S&P was plunging as well. So it was one of the greatest errors out there. And the Wall Street high-up pundits believe it. The staffers at the Federal Reserve believe it. After a boom, they think the short rates going down is going to extend the boom. No. Short rates up with the boom, short rates down with the bust. That's all you need to know.
So it's almost like steering an airplane then when the Fed does something. There's always time for it to take effect, but in actual fact, it's already happened.
Yeah, no, the Fed is not. Fed talks about imposing its will upon the markets, but hey, there's 12 members of the Federal Open Market Committee, and there's about 10 billion transactions a year going on out there that ultimately sets interest rates. And the key interest rate has always been short-dated T-bills in the senior currency. The whole world trades off of that. So, again, short rates going up is really good. Short rates going down is really bad.
Headline, worst-case scenario of Florida real estate crisis revealed as desperate residents flee.
Ooh. Oh, that was about Florida. And I thought everybody was... I looked it up because I remember ages ago reading about a problem in Florida when they had a crazy real estate bubble in the early 20s. And the whole of the East Coast, you know, people in New York and Philadelphia and Boston, they were commuting, traveling to Florida for holidays. It would be a pleasant train trip. And there was a building boom, and there was so much of a building boom that boxcars of 2x4s and building supplies and all that sort of stuff were jamming up the railroads traffic. And anyways, that peaked out in 1925 and was rolling over, and then in 1926 in came a hurricane that kind of did a lot of damage, and that was it. There was huge wealth on the East Coast lost in Florida land bubble. And now you've got a Florida land bubble, and I'm just wondering when the hurricane may come and do the physical damage. Who knows? You know.
An interesting thing about Florida, it's one of the few jurisdictions in the world where your home cannot be seized to pay debts.
I didn't know that now, Jim.
Yeah, it's one of the reasons why seniors like to retire there.
Yeah.
Not just warm weather.
Yeah.
A headline from the Daily Mail from September 3rd, Americans are really, really, really bullish on stocks.
Yeah, I like that. That was a strong one, all right. And so we had the first headline, which was unanimity in bullish views, and then we had now really, really bullish on stocks. That's from the Wall Street Journal, and so I think their headline guy was probably, they talked about it and got very serious about the headline and said, okay, let's do it, and they did it. I admire them for this one.
But again, that was on the 3rd. And all these corrections in the stock market started the day after Labor Day. Maybe by, you know, the end of this week, they won't be so bullish. But are there any signs of that?
Yeah, things are fading. It also, the high in 1929 was on September 3rd. And it was the same thing, a headline about people know that buying the dips has always been successful, and then you got to September, and you had the first hit, the Babson break, and then a bit of a rebound, and then away it went, and that was a very fast and severe bear market, cracked things, and it washed out in October, kind of tested itself in November and then steadied through into the year, but it was just the start of a monumental bear market, and with it, a monumental depression.
Now, if you went along with the old saying, sell in May, go away, you would have missed out on these record highs over the summer, wouldn't you?
Yeah. What you want to do, and we wrote it at the time about the old sell in May and go away, and I noted that great bubbles in the past, as they occurred in London when it was financial center, all peaked in May. Well, actually, the 1720 bubble in London peaked in June. So it's that time of year. So now as we're going into May and June, I was writing that if the stock market is not overbought, the rising trend is intact. But if the stock market gets overbought, it makes the whole thing precarious. And the action in June, July got straight up crazy stuff going on in the Magnificent Seven stocks and plus some individual stocks. There's names I can't remember. But anyways, when you get the straight-up stuff in the mid-year, then you watch out. But if it didn't get overbought, no problems. It got hugely overbought, big problems ahead of us.
Headline, first Dollar General, now Dollar Tree shares plunge as discount retailers warn of customers under pressure.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, all of a sudden, people stopped going into stores and discount stores. Yeah, no, I think part of when I read, when I read that article about these discount stocks plunging, is that the story included that the middle class people had been searching for and getting the goods bargains at these dollar stores and whatnot, and all of a sudden they have stopped. So, it was a sudden stop of retail business at discounters.
Costco and Walmart have noticed that they're getting shoppers pulling up in BMWs and Mercedes that they never got before because those people need to find bargains.
Yeah, I bet you indeed they do, yeah.
Well, if you take a look at how high, you know, mortgage rates have gone, where your $3,000 a month mortgage payment is now $6,000 or $7,000.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're going to find, you have to find to save money somewhere if you don't want to lose your house.
That's the way it is, yeah.
Headline, catastrophic jolt. Job openings crater to lowest since 2021 as data manipulation in the U.S. fails.
Yeah. Now, I don't really follow the employment numbers that closely, but I get the understanding that early in the year, they were rigging the employment numbers some months earlier than that down, so it would make look like an uptrend. Then I think this thing came along and bit them somewhere because they're now perhaps getting adjusted. But they also do that, Jim, in climate with their fake calculation of global temperatures, is that they actually were doing that, depressing the actual record from last year, say, or just sort of say a year ago from when they were doing the numbers. So they depressed the numbers artificially so that you then had an uptrend in the global temperature. So they were doing the books the same way on fake global temperatures and fake employment numbers. But hey, they're crooks, and there are too many crooks in government.
Well, yes, the data manipulation we're talking about is they would say every month 210,000 jobs created in the U.S., but now they've corrected it and saying we were out by 800,000 jobs. Also, when you talk about temperature, temperatures typically are taken at your airport. Airports... Yeah. Started off as grassy fields. Well, now they're surrounded by concrete. Yep. Also, what started last year, temperatures were always taken 6 feet up in a shaded structure. You've seen those little towers.
The little white boxes.
But now temperatures are taken at ground level.
Yeah.
So, you see, this is a manipulation of data.
Oh,
also,
yeah.
Ocean temperatures. This was pointed out to us by a friend of the show, Michael Rivero, is that ocean temperatures used to be taken by just independent boys, sonobuoys, that transmitted radio temperatures. But now they're using the cooling intakes into ships as the temperature gauge for the ocean. Well, the ship itself is going to have warmth from the engine and other activity. So the water coming in is going to be warmer. Again, so if you change the way you gather the data, you have to factor that in. Ground temperature is always warmer than air temperature, and in the wintertime, your ground is going to be colder.
Yeah.
Because it retains ice.
Mm-hmm.
So, there was a reason why they put those thermometers 6 feet up.
Yeah.
And that was the same across the planet.
Yeah,
now
they
you change
the same setup.
Yeah.
And, of course, now guy in the States, Tony, what's his name? Heller. He keeps track of all of the existing proper stations in the U.S., and he's a data wizard, so he keeps track of it. You want to get good data and good charts on temperatures and stuff, as Tony Heller at his website. So, yeah, he's a good guy.
And climate change is normal. And I don't think humans can do a damn thing about it, because it's the Earth's orbit, solar activity, volcanoes. You tell me how a tax is going to affect any of those.
Yep, that's right. You raised the tax. Well, Trudeau raised taxes to prevent forest fires. He's got the taxes and we've got the forest fires.
How come we don't have a national forest fire fighting force? How about that? Governments, the Martin Mars, the world's most effective firefighting aircraft, retired because no government would use it. It puts out 4 acres of fire at a time. It has a glass cockpit, so it can fly when there's poor visibility. Yeah. It's using virtual reality. All this stuff. Why are we using crop dusters that drop 800 gallons of water versus an airplane that drops 8,000?
Yeah, the Martin Mars was something else.
Right. Why aren't we building more of those? My thesis is there's too much money to be made fighting forest fires. These private companies...
Well, they want to keep the hysteria going.
Absolutely.
You know?
Why put a... Yeah. See, the Martin Mars, its specialty was initial attack. You spot the start. The thing puts out 4 acres at a time. Three passes, that fire's dead. Vancouver Island had no major forest fires while the Martin Mars flew.
Yeah.
The day they retired it, the government refused to use it. The owner of the Martin Mars even offered to let them use it for free for a day, and they turned them down. What does that tell you about the people in charge?
It tells you that they're manipulative and they want to have the crisis so that they can tax you and control you.
Yeah. There's something rotten going on there. Who's paying off who, Bob?
A phrase that I've been using for years is that the forces are in your wallet and in your rules and regulations. You know, in your face, the government is in your face and in your wallet. And that is really sums it up. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, Wayne Colson told me, BC is the only jurisdiction in the world that uses how much does it cost per hour to fight the fire versus how much does it cost per liter that you put on the fire.
Right.
The Martin Mars costs, because it's a giant aircraft, just a little tinier than a 747 jumbo. Yeah, it costs $120,000 an hour to run. But during that time, it could make 30 drops.
Mm-hmm.
That's 30 times 4 acres of fire put out.
Yeah.
You know, if they would have used the Martin Mars, Fort McMurray wouldn't have burnt down. It could have saved their downtown.
Yeah.
Just little stupid things like that. But, you know, you shovel poop out fast enough and long enough, people start to believe it.
Oh, yeah, that's the whole game. You repeat the lie enough times, then too many people believe it.
Oh, by the way, BC firefighters have been told by the government not to discuss the Martin Mars, or they'll be fired and lose their pension.
Oh, right.
I've seen the Martin Mars in action. The Burns Bog Fire in Vancouver around 2009, I believe.
Yeah.
They said this bog fire underground would burn for 3 or 4 months before you could put it out. The Martin Mars showed up. By the way, the firefighters literally cheered. I saw them do it. It had the fire out in 3 days.
Yeah.
See, so there's too much money to be made fighting forest fires by these private companies.
Yeah.
They don't want the fires out.
No. No. Everybody's got an axe to grind, and they're always acting on their own self-interest is the problem.
And I'll disclose that I have done voice work for the people who own the Martin Mars.
Yeah.
But it's only because I'm passionate about effective aircraft.
Yeah.
You know, it's the perfect, it's not perfect. It can't go into tiny canyons, but because of its size.
Yeah.
And if you put modern 10,000 horsepower turboprop engines on it, it would be faster and even more efficient.
Yeah. Yeah, they'd be able to take a bigger load and load faster and get to the fire faster.
And if you lost an engine,
it might not raise the top speed, but you just got that lifting ability with greater horsepower.
Yeah, and going from 20,000 horsepower, you got 10,000, you go to 40.
Yeah.
And if you lose an engine, you're not in danger of crashing if you have a full load.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's one of the great tragedies in Canadian history right here. It's now parked at a museum.
Yep. Yeah.
Bob, anything else? Oh, something that we have to get to. Green flop. Volvo abandons plans to sell only electric vehicles by 2030.
Yeah. Electric vehicles. EVs. What a scam this has been. One, they're sold as being pure because they don't have an exhaust pipe that utters CO2. And the other thing is that they're damned expensive to make. And it takes a lot of rare earths, so you've got to have nasty mines and all that sort of stuff to build these things. And then the operations, yeah, you're not having the tailpipe with combustion products from internal combustion engines, but these internal combustion engines now are highly, highly developed and are the best they've ever been. And then the other problem with the electric vehicles is they have this nasty ability to blow up all of a sudden because the lithium-based batteries, lithium is a highly reactionary element, and a little mistake in the manufacture of the battery cell or just a little this, and they short out, and they short out. They burn, and they'll burn for 2 or 3 days. And, you know, firemen just dread them, you know. And some jurisdictions, they're forcing people to park their electric vehicle away from ordinary parking and away from the building to save not just the building, but residents in the building from a horrible death due to an explosive fire. So they are, one, impractical, two, very dangerous.
On the Volvo decision to abandon electric only, not so much in North America, but in Europe, heavy construction equipment, heavy trucks or Volvos. And I'm just thinking, on a construction site, what are your charging facilities? Oh, we're going to use a diesel generator. Well, how did that help you? Why not just put an energy-efficient diesel engine on the truck to start with?
But they're finding that the batteries they have to put on, say, a pickup truck costs something, amount to something like 7,000 pounds. So it's just idiotic and a crazy fad. But the fad is dying quickly, and the Volvo headline more or less said that senior management now realize that it has been a fad and let's get, you know, just get out of the game as best we can.
I like the hybrid.
Hybrids can be good.
When I drove a hybrid was try to return to the radio station with more of a charge than I left with. So I pick the most gentle slope to go somewhere and then try to find, because in Vancouver we got loads of them, the steepest one to go down on the way back, because that would charge up the battery more.
Oh, yeah, you go down on trailing throttle and it charges the battery.
The second you touch the brake, it charges.
Yeah.
And the taxi drivers who use Priuses have told me they don't spend as much money on brake jobs anymore because of the self-braking from the electric motor. So it has saved the money on maintenance there.
Who's got a hybrid, and he says it works well. And I say, fine, that's fine. But the pure battery car is a disaster and a threat.
Bob, thank you so much for chatting with us.
Yeah, Jim, good to be with us. We sort of had good to be with you. We sort of had kind of a lively conversation here today.
Yeah, well, that's the way we roll. Because you say something and it just reminds me of other stuff. My guest has been market historian Bob Hoy, the chief investment strategist for chartsandmarkets.com. He was speaking to us from Vancouver. If you have any questions for Bob, you can send them to info@howstreet.com. We'll ask that question for you. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. Find us on X at How Street. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.